Shayna here with another entertaining episode of the Adventure Options Podcast. You want adventures and you have options. This episode, I get to interview Nikki Fitzgerald, one of the founders of the Angama Mara. If you want to have a great time talking and laughing, then all you need to do is hang out with Nikki. Stick around to hear how a giraffe swallows. This podcast is sponsored by Adventure Writers, copywriting for the travel industry. There are 4.6 billion web pages out there. Make sure yours stands out. Go to adventurewriters.agency for help. That's adventure, WRITERS.agency. Now for the show. Nikki, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Shania. I'm so looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, I heard about you because I was interviewing, I think he's your general manager at the Angama, Tyler over there. And he had so many good things to say about you that I thought, well, why don't I have Nikki on my podcast? Why am I talking to you?
I obviously train him very well.
Right? No, it was actually a really great interviewing him and then just everything he had to say about you and you and your experience in the industry and everything that you did for the Angama. You and your late husband, Steve, came out of retirement to start it. And I just thought this is a story that I definitely want to hear. In fact, in one of his emails to me, he said that you were, quote, the industry superwoman. And so I think I might just go ahead and put that as your title on the podcast.
Well, that's up for debate. I've been doing it for a long, long time, and I love what I do. Superwoman? No. Am I smart to get a super team around me? Absolutely. So it's all about the team.
And the fact that they love you says a lot. So let's go ahead and start from the very beginning. How did you get into the adventure travel world?
Completely by mistake. My husband, Steve, was a CPA, and I graduated in humanities. And we fell into the hotel business in 1981, quite by mistake. He'd put a deal together for some investors in a little beach hotel at the southern tip of Africa in South Africa. And he put the deal together, and then he said, well, why didn't we run it? I said, are you mad? We have no clue how to run a hotel. He said, we'll build it and we'll run it and then we'll see. So we packed up our lives in Cape Town and moved to the southern tip of the continent. And that was in 1981. And 60 lodges, hotels and restaurants later, here I sit. It's been a wonderful journey, but it was completely by accident. And we just found that we loved it. We did it well. So we did our first 15 years in the Cape, building hotels in the Cape province of South Africa, building hotels and restaurants. And then age 39, that must have been in 1994, Steve had a midlife crisis and a heart attack all in the same. He actually did have the heart attack, not the midlife crisis, all in the same afternoon, and said, I don't want to do this anymore in the Western Cape. I want to go back to Johannesburg, where we originally hailed from, and I want to join the conservation ecotourism world.
Couldn't you say, though, that his first midlife crisis was when, as a CPA, he said, let's go run a hotel? That kind of sounds like the first midlife crisis.
You're right. That should have been the first warning flag. I should have realized there were more to follow. Anyway, so we packed up our two young daughters in Cape Town, and we drove across the country. We joined a lovely little new fledgling ecotourism company then called Conservation Corporation Africa. A more suitable name, but a more dreadful name from a marketing point of view, it's hard to find. So Conservation Corporation was founded by Alan Bernstein and Dave Arty to bring a business model to conservation. So the name was good in as much as it's Conservation Corporation. They were the really early movers on bringing a financial model to sustainability.
So what drew you to them? What made you want to be a part of that?
Well, Steve, as a little boy, had spent all his school holidays in the Kruger Park. So he was a sort of closet game ranger. He thought, well, I can do this. And Dave Varty, who is the founder of Conservation Corporation, was a great friend of ours. And they had gone from one lodge to three, and not being hoteliers, the wheels were coming off. And he said to Steve, look, you've had your heart attack. now why don't you come and chill in the bush with me, and we can run a few lodges, and it'll be so much fun, and there'll be no pressure, there'll be nothing. Anyway, so off we set. Steve, dream come true for him. I was delighted to come back to Johannesburg. We joined Conservation Corporation, which then had three lodges. And when we left 9 years ago in 2008, we had opened, built and opened and operated in excess of 50. So much for the stress and for the chilling on a deck and watching the elephants go by.
When we left,
there were 2,500 staff in 6 countries on 2 continents. So that was really time then to take a breath. And I said, okay, we're done now because I'm old and I need to rest. And boom, bam, Angama popped its ugly head over the rampart. So there's no running away from this. And so it all started with Steve going into an environment that he absolutely loved, which was watching animals and being in the bush, being a good businessman, and wanting to be part of something that was growing and exciting and special. Now everybody does it, but it's quite fun to think back that we were part of those early movers of sustainability through tourism, and in our case through high-end tourism. I mean, there are many, many aspects of tourism. I'm off on Saturday to the Adventure Travel World Summit. Have you ever attended that?
I have not.
Oh, you're missing a great crew of people. Oh,
here's the thing. With all the interviews that I do, my bucket list is about 5,000 deep right now.
so this all happens next week in Italy under the ATTA, which is Adventure.
Yes, I didn't realize it was coming up so soon, though. Just next week, huh?
It's next week in Italy. And to go back to ecotourism, that is the greatest bunch of people you'll find in travel. And I've belonged to every association over the last 35 years, Relais Chateau, Small Luxury Hotels of the World, Virtuoso, the lot. But we're the nicest people you'll find in our industry come to this conference. And they really care about this planet. And I'm like the old granny at the conference, because the next oldest person at the conference is about 24. They all wear checked shirts and they've got beards and they wear big hiking boots, and I triple along. And I emceed a couple of, about 3-4 years ago in Ireland. And it really was, oh, here's Gran. Isn't it lovely to have her with us? So I'm kind of the matriarch of that association, and I love it.
You've earned that title. I think that's wonderful. Now, going back just a little bit, you said Steve was 39 when he had his heart attack?
He was.
That is really young.
Yeah, I know, unfortunately. And he battled with heart disease for the rest of his life, and sadly died a year ago. But his dream came true when he opened Angama. And I don't know if you saw the news yesterday, the day before, on the 9th of October, Angama was rated the best resort in Africa from Condé Nast Traveler's Reader's Choice Awards.
Well, congratulations. I did not see that, but I just think that's wonderful. And honestly, after talking with Tyler about it, I'm not really surprised.
You know, Shanna, it's such a wonderful thing that we do. People come to us to see animals, and we do that well. We look after them and we show them animals. But when they leave taking the stuff in their hearts. It's not so much the animals or the lodge or the tents. It's the way they were shown the animals, the way they were, how they were given their food, how they were spoken to. I think it's becoming a rare commodity in the Western world, this what I would call sweetness of service and patience of service and delight in service. And it's really nothing's too much trouble. And Africans are very warm-hearted, and Kenyans particularly so. And the guests are enchanted. I mean, these are some of the richest people in the world, and they come with very high expectations. And they plonk into our lodge, and we just do things quietly and sweetly and very authentic, very down to earth. And they lose their hearts totally. And if you read the TripAdvisor reviews, it's all about the staff. I keep saying, well, somebody says something nice about the animals or the tents or the food. No, it's all staff by name. And that's when you know you've done it well, is when your TripAdvisor reviews, your guests are mentioning every staff member that served them by name. Then you know that you've done it right.
Yes, that's something that Tyler also mentioned, is that it really feels more like family than just coworkers there.
Yeah, I think that comes from being a standalone business. I worked in a company, obviously, Conservation Corporation, which eventually rebranded into a company called Ambeyond over the years. And it was beautiful. The lodges were all small and intimate. There's something special about going back to the innkeepers at the front door. And I think guests love that. There's no flag, there's no branding, it's just, there's the owner and she's standing at the front door and everybody's around her. It's like Fawlty Towers. No, not quite as bad as Fawlty Towers. But it's that lovely feeling of, oh, we've come somewhere that is just, every detail is taken care of because this is all there is. We don't have anything else. We just have this lodge and we smother it with love. And it's wonderful.
That is wonderful. You mentioned that Steve had a love of animals and a love of the bush from a young age. How about you? Did you have that same love as a child?
Not at all. No, I'm
not the answer I was expecting.
Of course not. I'm a complete fraud. I'm neither a hotelier or a naturalist.
You are the most amazing faker then. I want to learn from you.
Oh dear. So I grew up going in my family holidays, we went to the beach. We were not bush people. So we were beach people. So we went to the beach and the first time I went to the bush was with Steve in my final year at school. We were together for nearly 46 years, you can imagine. And I sat in the car in the Kruger Park and I thought, okay, right. I haven't seen anything for an hour. And I'm one of those people, bring it on. But he loved it so much. He could literally sit at a waterhole for 4 or 5 hours and wait for the action. And I've got, can I read my book? Can I have a little snooze? he brought the love of the bush and African animals. And I'm pretty good at taking care of guests. So between us, and by the way, I do love the bush. And what I love particularly about where I operate now in the Masai Mara, it's always full of action. There's not a minute where I think, where's my book and can I have a snooze? The Mara, for 12 months of the year, just delivers. And because it's open savanna, you don't have to screw up your eyes and have you seen the elephant? It all plays out on this beautiful tableau of short grass plains. And it's kind of what I call Chanel game viewing. It's my kind of game viewing. It's beautiful. And so he did bring that, and he also, between the two of us, we grew very soon to love especially our time at and beyond. Of the difference that we can make as a business in these far-flung parts of Africa. That becomes very addictive, I must say. That really does, it's good stuff. But it all starts with guests, and I must be at pains to reiterate this, that we're not a conservation company. We're a guest-focused company. Because if we don't do guests well, we can't make money. If we can't make money, we can't give back. So this is not philanthropic. We don't go and raise money from donors to do all the things that we do in our communities in the reserve. It all starts with guests. And guests have to feel that they're not a means to an end. These are their precious holidays, and we're going to take care of them. And, of course, they fall in love. And then they say, well, what does this company do? And then we can tell them. They say, oh, well, can I do more? And so the thing is, there are no tent cards or plea cards or whatever you call them in the tent saying, please save a tree, please save a child, please save a rhino, nothing. Because my view is that guests come to us to do a whole lot of saving of themselves before they can even consider saving anything else. They're trying to save their sanity, their marriage, their sex life, the time with their children, all those things that break down through the year that when you go on holiday, you want to rediscover, regroup and reconnect. And when all those pieces are in place, then they go, this is a nice place. I wonder what else happens here. But we don't ram things down our guests' throats as they arrive, because they've come to us for a holiday and we're very respectful of that. And it's incredible. Our model, and this is in fact something I picked up at the Adventure Travel World Summit 4 years ago in Ireland. Somebody from the WWF stood up and said to us, in your world of giving back, don't run after the big money. Just take a little bit of money every day from guests. We do $10 per night per guest. And so it's micro donations is what he called it. And then he said, invest in scalable projects. Don't think as adventure travel operators, I'm not talking about the big guys, us little people, don't go for the big projects. Go for projects at maximum $30,000. So it's scalable projects funded by micro donations. And the beauty of this is there's no paperwork. There's no schmoozing. There's no reporting. There's no fancy boards and cocktail parties in New York. And that's what I came from my last life, when the Africa Foundation was a huge beast. The Angama Foundation's a tiny beast, but it's light on its feet. Every single cent from those $10 goes into projects, and it's incredible how far $10 goes in Africa. And I'm looking forward to next week to see if I can pick up another gem from the ATWS. But it was a good lesson for me. Don't run after the big stuff. Go after the small stuff, the donations. But for us, it really starts with guests. And we're guest crazy. There's a wonderful expression in our other language in South Africa. We've got 11 official languages, but there's a language here called Afrikaans. And there's a word called bedonnerd. And bedonnerd means completely mad crazy. And we are bedonnerd about guests. It's a nice word.
Nikki, you are so eloquent. I could just sit here and listen to you for hours, just go on. And whatever you say, I just want to, I'm just sitting here going, yes, yes, whatever she says, yes. You can tell how much you love your guests. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that was part of your passion, was serving people in the hospitality industry?
I have no idea. I tried it. I started as we all do, as waitresses at university to earn extra money. And I was in the University of Cape Town, and we had a Hard Rock Cafe, of all places. I mean, now we're talking 1974. And we had to wear those little GI hats, you know, those little white, what did they call them? And the white overalls, the dresses that were ruched in the waist with Hard Rock Cafe, I mean, with a little hat. I mean, too terrible. And I found I did that really well. I could really schmooze people. I could do it. I could, and I found quite quickly too that if it's all falling to pieces, it's quite fun to do the recovery. That's even more exciting than just nice guests. Difficult guests are a whole lot more fun. And it probably started from there. And I just found that by the way, we fired Steve from taking care of guests. He wasn't allowed anywhere near guests. Absolutely not. He was fantastic with staff, community members, landlords, investors, bankers. With guests, if somebody said, you know, I don't like your hotel, he said, well, then go somewhere else. We would say, no. So he wasn't that bad. But there's some famous stories about Steve being grumpy with a guest.
It doesn't really surprise me that a CPA is not necessarily good with guests. That's not usually the personality that goes into a CPA type degree.
But they do, the staff at and beyond and at Angama, they loved him. They loved him a whole lot more than they loved me, because I'm much more, you know, I walk around with six pairs of eyes, and that exhausts everybody. But they miss him terribly, and we all miss him. But he was, yeah, no, I don't think the guests miss him that much, but everybody else misses him.
That's so funny. Now, you mentioned the different conservation things that you're doing with the money that you're getting from Angama. Why don't you go ahead and tell us some of the things you're doing, some of the projects you're working on or donating to, and what and why you chose those projects?
Well, the needs in Africa are bottomless. So that's where you've got to start. They're quite overwhelming. We're in a community on the edge of the Great Rift Valley, and we probably have upwards of 25,000 Maasai neighbors scattered around the farms going back off the edge of the escarpment. So our three immediate focuses, education, health, and the reserve itself, the Mara. And our part of the Mara is called the Mara Triangle. On the education front, infrastructure is the big need. And we've just in the process now of building new toilets for a primary school. And when you see what that small little investment does, the children have been using pit latrines in sort of Watland buildings. I mean, just nothing. And now you see this little concrete block going up with proper toilets. And you just think, yes, it's such a small thing. But you think, yay, we did this. So classrooms, a lot of, and on the new classrooms, we do water gutters to catch water and tanks for water catchment for fresh water for the children to have at school. Obviously, classrooms is a big thing. Books, desks, and stationery is also part. That's a project that our guests support directly. So that's on the education side. So it's mostly infrastructure on the education side. On health, we built a clinic on our property, which is for the community, and we have a full-time medical officer at the property. And that's wonderful to see how we can. And Shan, Tyler's wife, in her last life in Seattle was a pediatric nurse. Yeah. So healthcare is a great passion of hers. And she set up this little clinic just beautifully. And we are so proud of this clinic. And so that's from a health point of view. And clean water is also part of that health. And then on the reserve side of how we can help in the reserve, in the Mara Triangle, we have, we joint fund a project called for cattle bomas to build bomas to keep the cattle in these bomas at night so the predators don't take them, don't hunt them. Because what happens if our Maasai neighbors lose animals, their livestock to predators, they then are keen to poison those predators. So that doesn't work for anybody. So we say, okay, let's build the bomas, make sure that your livestock is safe at night. And then we're also part of a compensation fund. So if an animal is lost to a predator, we compensate the livestock owner, the Maasai cattle owner, rather than he go out and retaliate to the predators. Because in East Africa, we have no fences. In South Africa and Southern Africa, most of the reserves are fenced. And that's fine because, you know, all the animals are inside and all the cattle are outside. We feel that it's more authentic in East Africa that everything exists as it's always existed. But there is this conflict of predators taking livestock. So we do compensation, we do the cattle, we do the bomas. We bought a vehicle for the conservancy to monitor black rhinos. As you know, rhino poaching has become catastrophic in on our continent, sadly. And so we've bought a vehicle for them to monitor the rhinos all day. So it's little things, but it's lots and lots and lots of little things. Right down at the moment to the new toilets. And actually, I'm actually more excited about the new toilets than anything else.
I am so excited about the new toilets. And I'll tell you why. I am known in my family as having the smallest bladder on the planet. I have to go to the bathroom all the time. This is probably TMI for a podcast, but I can just see myself as a little schoolgirl being so excited about having an actual proper working bathroom and how much that would lift my spirit and my energy for the day of schoolwork. I actually really, really love that.
Well, it's all these little things. And our guests are so enchanted by the fact that their $10 has enabled this. And then they say they want to do more. And when we hear that, we go, okay, whoa, what do you want to do? Oh, we want to save elephants. We say, great. And we take them and we introduce them to the Mara Elephant Trust or the Daphne Sheldrick Trust. We matchmake. Like good Jewish grandmothers, we matchmake and we let them go. Because then when we start talking thousands of dollars, that's when the reporting happens and the this and the that. And we can't do that. We're just too small. So if we've got wonderful guests who want to do more on a bigger scale, they want to build a university, fantastic. Then we send them to an NGO who we partner with, who's that's their sole purpose in life is to do a big project. So we just stick with the micro donations, scalable projects, and it fills us with much joy.
I love that. And it's going to sound so cliche, but if everyone just did something small in their sphere, in their world where they live, imagine how many big things would happen from all of these small things. So I think that's actually a really great philosophy that you're standing by.
And the adventure travel community do a massive amount. And what we do as an adventure travel community, we do it because it's the right thing to do. We don't do it to win awards or to get column inches or because, you know, it's just the right thing to do. It's you look after your staff, you look after your community. In the olden days, when we were the first movers on this, you could make a lot of noise about it. But now, in fact, it's not really smart to make a noise about it. You just do it. And when you're asked what you do, you can tell what you do. But, I mean, you won't see an enormous splash on our Facebook page that we build the toilets because people expect Angama to do that. And the children know that these toilets are fantastic.
I want to come use the toilet.
You'll come.
Do you think they'll let me in the school just to use the bathroom?
And you'll get a beaded necklace, and you'll get a shuka, and you'll get a song, and you'll get everything while you're on the toilet. So don't you worry, it'll all happen.
Yeah, but the 10th time I'm in on that toilet, they're going to say, all right, I think you've had your turn. I'm going to really regret this when I'm going back to edit and I see how much I talk about myself in the bathroom.
Thank goodness it isn't live.
It's true what you're saying about how most people in this industry really do care about the earth, about the people they're working with, about the sustainability of tourism. And in fact, I feel like I keep finding these people to interview on my podcast, and I keep thinking that I'm not going to find a more golden person than that person as far as their sincerity and what they're doing. And I just think that's the most amazing thing. Yes, everybody should be doing that. And then I interview the next guy and they're doing something completely different, like waste management or something like that. And I think, no, everybody should do that. And I go to the next guy and it's the travel without plastic. And I think, yes, everyone should do that. And it's just, it is. I'm in awe all the time of the people I get to speak with. So you're right on point with that.
I must say, because I'm a small person and I can throw stones at the Goliaths, when I hear that one of the big chains are removing straws, I go, please, they should have gone years ago. Take all the plastic out. Stop making big noise about straws. Yes, straws are horrible, but everything else is horrible too. All those plastic amenity bottles you put in your rooms, those are horrible things. Take it all out. But I don't. I go, well done on the straws. the straws are the beginning, but the straws are just the tip of the iceberg. You know, and there is so much and to make a big noise about straws, you should be working right through the business. I mean, we are completely plastic free at Angama, not because it was suddenly travel against plastic. It was just the right thing to do. And it makes business sense. It's cheaper. So not only is it right, but it's commercial. So I think that's the next thing is, do people need to drink out of straws? No. Why are we wasting money on straws? So, you know, it's everything. And if it's got commercial value, it will sustain. If it doesn't have commercial value, then it doesn't sustain.
Very true. Very true. So let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about the bush and safaris and what your favorite part of that is, of that aspect of Africa.
I think my favorite part is if I'm on a safari vehicle with first-time guests, and they've seen most of these animals in zoos as children, and they've seen them all on television, National Geographic, Animal Planet, and of course those are all edited right down to the finest of the finest and the best parts. But still, when you're driving along and the guide says, can anybody see anything? And the guests all going, and they're looking and they can't see anything. He says, look over there. And there above the trees is a giraffe's head. So you don't just drive up to the giraffe, you build it up and there it is. And then you drive up to the animal and you stop the car and then you look around at the people's expression on their faces because they're right next to a giraffe and they look up at this. And the best part is nobody's saying anything because it's just this moment of wonder. And that's what I love. I love that when they suddenly connect that this is not something that's in a zoo. These animals roam these plains freely. And look at this beautiful creature. And then the guide will say, any idea what this animal is doing? And then you get involved in the story. So it's not about how tall is a giraffe and how long the gestation period is of a giraffe and how many stomachs the giraffe's got. You can Google that. You can actually sit in the back of the vehicle because there's Wi-Fi everywhere and you can just Google it. But to actually think, what is this animal doing? Oh, and they look. He says, why is he looking what is he looking at? He's looking at something very intently. And then the guests get their binoculars out and they're looking. And you know, in all chances, the animal's watching a predator or something. So the whole story, that's what I love. I love the story around an individual animal in the moment. Not animals generic, but what is this giraffe doing? Have you noticed the way he swallows? And you look, and then suddenly this tennis ball goes, and then you choose, and this tennis ball of cud or whatever just comes all the way down. You watch it for 3 hours. It's the best thing ever. It's the most therapeutic thing. It's like watching people work with cement. It's to watching a giraffe, what do you call it, regurgitate that stuff. So that's for me the joy of just those little stories about the animals in the moment and getting the guests involved. I mean, I once went on a game drive with one of my guides in my past job, and he said to a whole bunch of Americans, they said, what bird is that? And he turned around and said, what bird do you think it is? I thought, oh, my goodness me, that's so rude. You can't do that. They don't know what bird it is. He said, okay, we've seen, does it look like a weaver to you? We've seen weavers this morning. And it was so clever the way he got them to eventually, with some help from him, it was not, oh, it's a whatever. Is it this family? Is it that family? Do you think it's got a Rufus chest? Yes, it does. Well, maybe it's got Rufus in its name. And so he built it up. So I think what I love about it is the storytelling.
Two things from that. One, I'm really sad that I won't be publishing this video because I want everyone to see you do the giraffe regurgitation.
Thank goodness. I could have been in my pajamas, Shane. It's just as well.
You do such a good imitation of that. And then second, you would love watching me on that ride then. Because I would be that guest that would just be in the palm of that guide's hand and looking everywhere he tells me to look. And I just love a good story. I love a good storyteller. So
it's not information anymore. Guests don't need that. They're mostly far smarter than us anyway. But man, they love the stories. They love all the stories, the people stories, the animal stories, the game reserve stories. They love the stories. It goes back to the African way of storytelling, which is what we do. We tell stories.
Yes. So this is going to be kind of a weird question, and you may feel awkward answering it. How's that lead up? But the question is, what are you most proud of all of your accomplishments within the adventure travel industry? Which one are you the most proud of?
Oh, that's easy to answer. You get a community member who has never left his community ever, not even. He might have been to the local town, but he certainly, in my instance, has never been to Nairobi, never been to the sea, never got on an aeroplane. And I have probably 40 or 50 people on my staff at Angama who fall straight into this category. You take a young Maasai man or woman, and you bring them into your organization, your lodge. You charge your guests $3,500 a night for two people. I mean, it's obscene, the rates we charge. And this young Maasai man or woman serves them perfectly. Game, safari guide, butler, chef, housekeeper. And it's like a miracle unfolding. You bring them in, you train, and you train from the heart. Skills come. Our industry is, you know, it's not rocket science, you know. Fork on the left. Is the fork on the left? I think fork on the left, knife on the right. That's easy stuff to do. And actually, if it's on the wrong side, it doesn't matter because it's more charming. And you watch them grow and flourish and get married and then take a second wife. And I'm like, no more wives. And then have babies and then come to you and say, what we love about working here is you offer us medical insurance for our children and our families are well and healthy. And you just watch this person who would probably have never had this, well, maybe in another lodge, but just grow. And that's fantastic. I can die a happy person knowing that so many people that I've worked with, I've just chucked them into the deep end of this luxury adventure travel, and they've just flourished. And then become senior managers and become camp managers and become lodge managers in my day, regional directors in Tanzania. A guy who started just as an assistant camp manager ended up as regional director. It's wonderful.
Just watching people's lives change. I think that's beautiful. Nikki, it has been so fun talking to you. There's two questions that I always ask my guests at the end to kind of wrap up their interview. The first one is, where's your favorite place to travel? And for you, I'm going to say you can't include like the Angama Mara region. Okay. Because we obviously that would be your baby. So that's like your favorite, but pick somewhere else. And then two, what piece of advice would you leave today's traveler?
To today's traveler?
Yes.
So I don't have a favorite destination, but I love to walk. So anywhere where I can walk, I've walked in the foothills of the Himalayas. I've walked through the desert to Petra. I've walked through South Africa. So if I can walk, and I now I've become a little bit of lazy, we don't carry my pack anymore. I've climbed Kilimanjaro. So if I can walk anywhere that I can walk, is a beautiful experience for me, and with a great guide. That has to be, because and I don't care if I sleep on stony floor, but nice food is also quite special, especially if it's regional food. I'm crazy about food. So for me, hiking, but not, it used to be a little more hardcore than it is now, but walking in beautiful, even if it's walking in Italy or walking in France, walking in Africa, just that is because you stop, you slow down, and it's for me, it's a beautiful way to travel. And advice to travelers. Sure, this is an interesting one. Again, I would probably say it all depends on where you're going. But if you're wanting a great experience, find a great guide. Spend your money on the guide. You know, accommodate yourself less expensively. Eat local food. It's delicious. Always eat local food. And don't say, oh, I'm going to get a tummy ache. That's just such nonsense. There are a billion Indians who are eating off the side of the street. Why can't you can't eat when that food is so yummy and so cheap. But find a great guide and find a great guide who you connect with and you brief that guide. That's the other thing I'd say. Brief the guide properly. Do not take me shopping. I do not want to go shopping. Do not take me into a carpet shop and leave me there that I can't escape. I want to hear the stories. I want to hear the story from the carpet man, where he started. And I might buy a carpet, I might not, but tell me the stories. So that's my advice would be find the great guide. And then, especially in adventure travel, I mean, obviously, you know, you can walk around London on your own, but if you're in Nepal or you're in India or you're in Peru or you're in wherever, find that great guide who's going to tell you stories and make you part of what's going on around you.
That was perfect advice. So we're just going to leave it on that. Nikki, thank you so much for your time and for your humor and your personality. And thanks for sharing all of your experience with us.
Thank you, Shana. I really enjoyed that. Thank you so much.
Shana here. I'm pretty sure Nikki and I are soul sisters. She just makes me smile. My takeaway was that it doesn't matter how you got into the adventure travel industry. Just love your role. Remember to visit adventurewriters.agency to join my mailing list and get updates when a new podcast episode airs. Until next time, goodbye.